Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome to Think Big. Guest today is Hannah. Hannah, can you please tell us where you are in the world geographically and what you do for a living?
Hi. Yes, thank you. I am geographically located mainly in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My company is called California Gourmet. When we started off, I had an office actually in California, and a lot of my target audience was in California. So this is the main logo. And awesome. Most of our shipping, however, is generally from the East Coast because a lot of the ports are there and they can go to the UK, goes to Australia, different continents ship from New Jersey ports usually. So we do a lot of our packaging and are importing to the East Coast as well.
Awesome. So what would you say is your biggest market as far as, or actually, let me ask you this first. I want to kind of start a little bit more high level and get into a little bit more of your backstory and, you know, the inception of California Gourmet. So can you tell me a little bit about, you know, what your background was kind of leading up to, you know, you founding this company, and then, you know, just kind of walk up to, you know, a day in the life of your, you know, experience today running the company.
Sure. Yeah. So interestingly, for about 20 years, I was actually a teacher. And
oh, amazing.
Yes. And I'm still in touch with my students. And there was a bit of an overlap. I would say around 2013, there was a need for high quality Belgian dairy free chocolate chips. Basically, until that point, there was a great line that was available in Trader Joe's and Whole Foods. It was similar as far as being a Belgian chocolate chip and also tasting great and at pretty good pricing. They were dairy-free and gluten-free at the time. And in around 2013, there was a whole Wall Street Journal report explaining that the whole parent company was not able to do dairy-free packaging anymore.
Oh, wow.
And they completely, I believe Walmart, it was actually one of the stores that carried a similar product as well in 2013. They were great. They were delicious and priced well. So Walmart, Giant Eagle, Trader Joe's, and Whole Foods all stopped their vegan chocolate chips at the time. A lot of us stocked up. We bought a whole year's worth and figured that they'd go back to being dairy free. And I called the parent company when it didn't happen. And I said, well, can we make these dairy free? Can we do some allergy testing and run these on a dairy free line? And they said, it's going to be dairy. There's no way really to package these dairy free. It won't work. So as we see, it's been almost 10 years and they have not been able to bring in the Belgian chocolate chips dairy free. So this is a product that I saw there was a need for, and I kind of felt like I better do it because a lot of the other brands that are out there, either they don't have that same quality taste that these have, or there are one or two lines that are sort of similar. They're American chocolate, so you don't get that Belgian taste in that roast, you know, the richer, you know, pure. Actually, I sent to your office. I don't know if you guys got a chance to sample them.
I need to ask Dan. Thank you so much for that, though. He might have got it. You sent it to the Fort Worth office?
His Dallas. He's gave me
the Dallas office. Okay, cool.
So I purposely want him to taste it first so that when he's talking, he understands, like, why go to this hassle of importing chocolate and packaging and selling it across the country if you can get all these brands in the stores? And when you taste it, you see there's actually a quality difference in the Belgian taste, as well as people who have nut allergies and soy allergies and dairy allergies and even gluten allergies. They can trust this product that we don't have any cross-contamination, and they know that they're safe if their children are safe, if they have that need. That was something they were trying to fill as well. So as we branched out and realized there are soy versions, there are sunflower versions, these different ingredients that are in some current vegan chocolate chips. Ours is free of any sunflower, soy, or seeds, you know, different allergens mm-hmm. that recently have been cropping up. So that's when that idea started. And then we branched out and we have our products. They're selling in Australia and Panama and the UK and in Mexico. And we're hoping to branch out like to other countries, South Africa, maybe Israel, different places where there's a need for a nut-free chocolate. There's quality chocolate in these places, but they don't have the dairy-free and the nut-free we're looking for.
Right.
So that's why we started, and it's been growing ever since.
That's amazing. Yeah. I actually very recently made a big change in my own life after learning about, you know, so many of these like seed oils and the damage they could do to your body and the kinds of reactions you can get from them. And once I changed that, it was really like life-changing to me, honestly. Like I've read about a lot of things like this, you know, like little things like kind of like fad things. Take this out of your diet. You shouldn't be having that much of this. But that was like one big thing for me. I was like, this is a serious change, like almost immediately. So I'm just curious though, like people may not know, if you kind of touch a little bit more upon, what makes something like a Belgian taste of chocolate? Can you just go like a little bit deeper into like, what makes something a Belgian chocolate rather than, maybe any other kind of source chocolate from other areas of the world?
Sure. So it's imported into America, and that Belgian roast, when you start off with the cocoa bean and the conching process, the roasting process, the most common comparison that I've made that people can understand is if someone tastes coffee and they have a French roast coffee or an Italian roast coffee or an American roast coffee, you taste the difference there. It's the method of how it's roasted, it's where the cocoa beans are from. And
Gotcha.
your Italian coffee will taste one way. Your French coffee might be a little bit more intense and stronger. Arabica roast is that there's all different roasts, and that changes the flavor of the coffee. So chocolate is the same way. If it's roasted and manufactured and processed in the Belgian method, then it'll have a Belgian taste to the chocolate. There's Swiss chocolate, and then American chocolate, unfortunately, hasn't yet, ramped up to that level. And that's why this is more of the more popular products locally. You mentioned about you felt better, being off seed oils or soy. This is a soy-free product as well,
Amazing. Yeah.
and this is the mini chip version of that. And it is hard to actually find packing plants that will pack the items. We can import them and manufacture them soy-free and nut-free, but to find a plant that the facility is nut free and soy free is very, very challenging. So
Right.
that's something that we've also been able to work with and available to the public.
Amazing. So I just want to ask you a few, questions just kind of about your processes or just kind of like some like traits about the business that I see a lot of variability between kind of companies in the similar space. So I see you have some things listed on the website, kind of like e-commerce style. Could you give me kind of a breakdown just like percentage wise, like how much of your revenue are you doing through like direct to consumer sales, whether it's through the website or otherwise, or and what percentage of the revenue is coming from like any retail deals that you have and things of that nature?
Sure. So what's actually unique about our company is that we do have our products available to a variety of types of customers. So we have retail customers that can purchase these on the store shelves. That's our ideal customer. And the way we reach that, I would say that's close to about 50% of our business.
Okay.
So we reach them by having regional distributors. So for example, New York and New Jersey has one distributor. We have distributor in the Florida area and surrounding South Carolina, Atlanta areas. We have another distributor that services California, the West Coast, Washington State, et cetera. I'm here in Pennsylvania. I actually service Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and sometimes Illinois. Our first chain was actually a chain in Illinois called Jewel. It's part of the Albertsons chain. And he immediately, the second he tasted it, he said, "If it's anything like Trader Joe's, I'm gonna buy a pallet. I'm gonna put it right in the middle of the aisle and mark it on sale." And he was my first big customer that literally he sent me a picture the next day. The pallet was smack in the middle of the aisle. Customers would be
Nice.
like right in front of their face. And they taste it. We go to food shows and people taste the quality and their eyes light up. They're like, "Wow, this is actually chocolate." Rather than some companies use filler, they'll stick a lot of soy in it, or they'll stick a lot of if it's extra cocoa butter, for example, you can still say it's 72% cocoa, but it's mostly cocoa butter versus actual cocoa. So cocoa butter
Ah, it's
flavor.
always something with those percentages in food, it seems.
Exactly. So for example, this is a 72% cocoa. This is on its way to being more available retail, and it's actually cocoa. So you have that stronger Belgian taste. If the 72% is obtained by other companies by just putting cocoa butter in, it's going to have like more of a margariny shortening taste, and you're not going
Right.
to get that chocolate lava cake or that runny, really fudgy brownie taste that you'll get with the real. So if Dan, yeah, Dan's got to share this with you for you to
Oh,
really
he
know.
does. He does. I'm gonna ask him right after we get off this. Like, you better. It was interesting too. On a call I had earlier today, I learned that gluten-free offerings, there's actually like a parts per milliliter or milligram PPM with gluten-free things that goes up to a threshold of almost 20, which like apparently is for somebody who has like celiac or is very sensitive to gluten, is like way too high. But that's like the threshold for American brands. Likewise with this 72% cocoa. It's like there's not like a real trustable metric for it that you really like know what it means. It's a shame. And that's why like brands like yours, I think, are becoming much more popular with folks and brands where you can actually interact with the person who's making it and get this kind of information, whether it's through a podcast like this or you can go to their website and read like what they're blogging about and things like that. I think people are starting to love that because they are seemingly losing trust in even things that are clearly printed on a label that you think You shouldn't be able to put that if it's not true. A lot of times it's not. So
absolutely. What's possible is there's a trace still on the machine. So the product itself in those cases could possibly be completely gluten-free. But when they come into a machine that someone else used, you know, 2 days earlier and there's residue there, that is a huge problem. And I'll tell you, I wasn't going to mention it, but along the lines that you just said about being extra, extra careful, there's never gluten on the machine its whole life of any process, any product that's on there. This particular product, in addition to being vegan and soy free, we know it's 100% free of gluten. There's not even a tiny part per million because it happens to be a Passover product. So with Passover, we have an extra stringency to get these symbols, to get the OKP, the kosher P, Passover. There can never have been gluten on the machine. It's scrubbed, sanitized beyond belief, and only from literally from cocoa bean, from start to finish, there are eyes, extra eyes watching, making sure no one's walking in with a sandwich, even into the room. You could be 100 feet away. You cannot be in that room with a sandwich. No,
nothing. Awesome.
You're completely covered, you know, aprons on your body, nothing. There's no residue, even in the air. And that, like you said, one part per million possibly could be not on the machine, not on the product, but in the air floating from another room. And that's a huge no-no for someone who's celiac and someone who's sensitive. So the safest product is actually something that has gone through a whole set of supervision, making sure from manufacturing to import to processing and then packing on the machine, making sure it's completely gluten-free, like you mentioned. And nuts, see, some people have the same problem if they have a nut-free product. But if it's back to the machine that had nuts on it 3 weeks ago, I've heard from customers that other brands, their children will have like a throat irritation if there was any sort of nuts in the room, and their children know. That's actually why we kept these both blue, is because their children know they're soy-free, nut-free. There's literally no cross-contamination anywhere in the facility that they would have that sensitivity to. And that's a huge issue. As the years have gone on, I find more and more sensitivities are coming up with the children.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, that's like, it's so important. The kind of diligence that you're practicing with these things to be able to put these labels on, it's so important, because I feel like people, again, have just kind of like lost trust with even things that are labeled as, you know, gluten-free or peanut-free or all of these things. It's like, you just hear it time and time again through the grapevine. And it's like, well, don't eat this brand. And then there's another brand. It happened to my son. It happened to my daughter. It happened to... So this is really important that the brands like yours are doing this kind of work and being super transparent with what's going on. So it's really important. I applaud you for that. And I think, you know, part of your success is probably very much attributed to that. People really resonate with, you know, that kind of transparency. So now, I know you mentioned, you said your retail is kind of like 50%, you know, the revenue of the business. What is the other 50%? Is it kind of like piecemeal of a bunch of things? Or what would you say is the other kind of half of that?
The other 50%, I have a sample here to show you. This is a 5-pound bag. So we have caterers and restaurant owners. And
oh, great. You're doing food service?
Fresh. You can see how fresh. Let me see if I can get this in the picture here. I'm trying to get the...
It thinks it's the background. It's blurred.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, right. I know when I go with this...
Oh, yeah, there we go.
It's really fresh, really dark. And that's free as well. So this is the 48% cocoa line. And the other 50% of my business, I would say, is a combination of these 5-pound bags to bakers and caterers. And then we also have 50-pound boxes of those products, as well as some of our customers actually like the 2,000-pound pallets. So what's great is we're able to just ship them directly. I just shipped about 6,000 pounds to a Chicago customer who makes really cool, for holidays now, he's doing some chocolate frogs and some chocolate. He's doing all these things in chocolate, and it's very tasty, very fresh. And they look great. You can do chocolate logs. You can do all sorts. I've learned, you know, almost everything. You can dip strawberries, dip marshmallows. Almost everything goes well with chocolate. And you can always experiment with more items. I have found, let's see if this will show up. I have found, let's see. You've got to see me. Yeah, there you go. So that's, you know, so it does get nice.
It's such a like rich color. It doesn't look like the same old like milk chocolate a lot of that stuff is made out of. It looks amazing.
Right. So it's all dairy free and it's quality Belgian chocolate. And it also has a nice glossy look to it. So any shapes you make with your molds, any sort of designs you make works well, as well as I work to develop different recipes that usually are just two ingredients. And for example, if someone mixes canned coconut milk with two bags of these, two cans of coconut milk with two bags of these, and it's blended in a Vitamix blender, which actually heats it up and melts it within 3 minutes. You pour it into mousse cups and you have chocolate mousse.
Oh, amazing. And I love that.
No eggs, no chemicals, no whip, nothing processed. It's literally two ingredients. and it's dairy-free, healthy, and you're not dealing with any vegan issues or sensitivities to, you know, eggs or milk or anything. So, or not.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So how do you find yourself, you know, working with food distributors and retail mostly, it sounds like? Now, what are you doing to drive, you know, new business and revenue in each of those sectors respectively? I hear from, you know, a lot of people in this space, this got like vegan, sustainable kind of food space. I've been doing a lot of interviews and podcasts, and it seems to be about half of the time, it seems to be a big like outreaching effort to gain that business. And then I'd say the other half of the time, it just kind of happens organically. And, you know, CEOs of companies like yours will have like people reaching out to them proactively and, you know, deciding kind of which deals to take, which are going to work, which are feasible to fulfill and things like that. Which one of those two do you feel like, you know, you fell into? Like, how have you gained these relationships in retail and food service?
So one way we do that is we have like a Shopify account and people can buy direct if they're in states that the distributors can't reach. Mm-hmm. So they're directly. We also have Amazon and Amazon Prime. So that helps people who also, they can't reach those markets as well. We find that word of mouth helps a lot. Like you saw, if someone has allergies or looking for high quality, there's restaurants that have a demand and they're making programs or week-long events. The pastry chefs will use it. They'll love it. The next year, they'll buy more of them. So we find that increases, as well as we like when we go to food shows and people actually taste that in person. That's the best way to really get the quality, see people face to face and get great pricing. I love being able to just sell direct, offer great pricing. You don't have to go through middleman and yep. Price up. I'm going to pull up here I was surprised myself when I saw, this is a new development because it just kind of happened the last week or so. Like you're saying, how to, you know, improve, you know, market share and everything. Basically the cocoa stock in the last two months has literally spiked. As recent as yesterday, there was actual news that, you know, it had gone from $8,000 a pound to metric ton, it was 9,000. And then just today, my brother sent me an article that it jumped up to 10,000 per metric ton. So we're kind of navigating unprecedented territory with feed. And that's part of word of mouth now, is when people are seeing, oh, my previous supplier is not giving the prices I want. Let's check out. Well, let's see if they can get us pricing that works for us. So we're trying to accommodate and work with people to get them the best possible price. And they're learning, you know, if they buy direct, or the best way is if they actually send a truck and come pick up from us, they can get better pricing than if we try to work out transport and get to them, those types of things with them to see how to get the best pricing for them.
Interesting. So how much of your business would you say comes from, you know, people buying through Amazon or through the website that don't actually have, you know, like direct fulfillment deals with you? Is that a big part of the revenue for the business, or is that kind of like one-offs once in a while?
There's definitely repeat customers. I see when they like it. Sometimes I try, or I tell the shipping people, we try to put a sample of something new inside their box, you know, as a
That's
surprise.
That's nice. Yeah.
Like, oh wow, these mega chunks are delicious. Let me buy a 5-pound bag. So that's fun, and I enjoy doing that. And it's always surprising. And when they like, oh wow, that was not even on your site yet, or it wasn't in the store, and I love it. So market share, especially I think the new Amazon fees and stuff, I think it's kind of to get the word out, get the taste out, and then product recognition. Once they buy it, they like it. If they're in the store, they see it on the shelf, they'll remember, oh yeah, that was great. I loved it. I'm going to buy a few bags here. So I prefer the retail shelves. I think that way they distribute. And get it done, put on the shelves. It takes a lot of the legwork off of the constant, you know, day-to-day shipping. But there have been repeat customers. If it's a random state, New Mexico, Tennessee, there's some random places. Interestingly, there is a need for dairy-free chocolate. And there's places in the Caribbean, there's Cancun. I mean, there's random places where shoppers will say, I can't get this in my city, you know, ship me. Or they'll have a P.O. box actually in America somewhere, and then they'll ship them. And then when they get a container of items, they put it all together. So we're happy to fulfill people's interest in having a quality product that they can't get in their local stores and try to ship to them as well. So
yeah, that's great. I mean, if you get your foot in the door in, you know, a different area and it really, you know, ends up taking off with interest, I mean, you know, then you can figure out the logistics from there, obviously, right? So that's great. That's great that you do that. I love that you sent those chocolates. I love that you send little samples to people. That's like, that little touch is something that's so missing in this day and age too. It's just, I'm sure, again, another reason why, you know, you've had success in this business. So that's awesome. So I just want to ask you a couple more questions. One that I always love to ask everybody that I meet with is, no, if it actually two. First being, you know, if we spoke again a year from now, where do you see the business a year from now as far as, growth goes, penetration into new markets. What's kind of like your growth expectations and projections going into next year?
Okay, so ideally, domestically, I would say it would be fantastic if we were in some of the California food grocery store chains. My goal originally when we made the brand was to be in places like Erewhon, Bristol Farms, and Sprouts. Those are like the type of customer we're looking for and the type of
Right.
market for. So now with the cocoa spiking and people maybe trying out other options, we hope to be in those types of stores. Whole Foods is a national chain that we have tried to be in, starting off locally, regionally. They were interested in the idea, especially a woman-owned business, especially a local business. The part that became challenging was it's actually an imported chocolate. So they said at that point, even though you're a local woman-owned business, because it's imported chocolate and it's great quality, doesn't meet the criteria anymore being a local business. So we need to go nationally.
Interesting. Yeah.
This would ideally be, I'd love to see a year from now that it's in Whole Foods. And then as far as expanding markets, the Australia market's happy with our product. The two markets that we know have been requesting it that we haven't been able to get distribution there yet is both Israel and South Africa. There's a need in both of those places to get quality dairy-free chocolate that does not have nut cross-contamination. There's actually a lot of Americans in both of those countries that had those sensitivities. It's usually the Americans that have the sensitivities that the natives of those countries don't have a problem with the nuts, but I think somehow not having the immunity here and then and going off and living elsewhere creates that nut allergy that the
Right.
local products don't have that ability to serve them. So yeah, we would love to be in those markets at this time next year. And
Awesome. That's a shame because I feel like this is like Whole Foods all the way. It seems to be like everything about it. I can't, that's such a weird, like just like hard stop because it's imported. They don't have anything on their shelves that's even has imported ingredients. Is that what they're saying?
well, as a local entrance is kind
Oh,
of,
I see. Okay.
and we were trying the shortcut way to get in locally, but because it's import ingredients there, they would do, for example, we had a local hummus company that was on their shelves that was delicious, doing a great job. In fact, there's another Zahav by Michael Salmanov is a local hummus company. So he got in locally to a lot of the Pennsylvania. He actually grew up here in Pittsburgh and I knew him as a kid. And he was able to get in regionally because it's a regional product and he's manufacturing it regionally. To get Whole Foods nationally is about a 1 year process. So we do plan to do that.
Gotcha.
We like to get in there, but because it's imported, we can't go through the shortcut. We have to go through the regular channels.
I see. Okay, that makes a little more sense. I was gonna say, I mean, I was like, there's gotta be things, both things from Whole Foods, I feel like are like they're like advertised as being imported ingredients. So wait, like that makes sense. But okay, I see. So they won't take things from the like local entry unless it's like totally locally sourced. That I see. That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
And it's
So
non-GMO. We've filled out all the criteria. It's non-GMO. It's all natural. We do
Interesting.
other criteria. So
Gotcha. Okay, last and final question. It's my second favorite to ask. If you could speak to yourself, when you started this business, of all the things you've learned since then, what would be the biggest piece of advice if you could go back and tell yourself on day one? What would that thing be?
great question. So thankfully, I was actually lucky. This June, I'll be celebrating 10 years of
Amazing.
first launch in the market. So I will say that thankfully, shout out, it was Yossi, Yitzi, and Menachem. They were all involved in creating this packaging. And I was actually thinking back to this before we got on the podcast, thinking that it's probably unusual for a company to have a design and in 10 years and not redo it. It's that modern and that traditional that it's classic. It's a classic
It
design.
is. It really is. Yeah.
And this was the first one. This came out later when we started going to the soy-free market, and that was a surprise as well. That was also about 10 years ago. We didn't realize soy-free was of interest to people. That was also successful, thankfully. As time has gone on, we're realizing there's more and more benefits to it. But what's fascinating, when this first, you asked about 10 years ago, what popped up when I asked the designer to make it, and this came in the email. At the time, everything on the market, every single brand of chocolate on the market was all either brown or yellow. If you think about Nestle, you think about Valrhona, Ghirardelli,
Yeah, it's true.
all natural colors, brown, yellow. And this popped up and I was in shock. I was like, wow, red, like that's crazy. And what I've learned, like you're asking, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago? What I've learned is give it 24 hours, think about it. Say, you know what? I'm not saying no. I'm not going to comment. Let me absorb it for 24 hours, think about it. And during that time, the more I thought about it, I realized it's perfect because it's different than everything else. It pops out, it's recognizable, and people will know when they see it, they'll know to find it and put in their cart and buy it. So
Yep.
was revolutionary. After that happened, I noticed other brands starting to get bold colors, and that was very to me. But you were definitely the first with that. So I appreciate that. And interestingly, now that Nut Free is our a lot of our customer base, and the delicious Belgian taste is really what sells it, and you'll taste it gives it to you. But 10 years ago, one of our first packing plants actually was not a Nut-Free packing plant. And when we had to change, it was an expensive change to change elsewhere. But it thankfully worked out well, because we realize now the importance of being Nut-Free. We're able to actually write Nut-Free on our packaging when we had to change packing plants. So you're asking what I would tell myself 10 years ago is that I would say, look, you know, this change happens, but like, you know, when one door closes, another door opens. So the door that closed was that packing plant, but it opened up the door now for us to be a Nut-Free and soy-free and gluten-free offering. So when those changes occur, there's more doors and more opportunities that open up.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, I think any young entrepreneurs listening to this, or not even necessarily young, just newer entrepreneurs, or, you know, an entrepreneur in a new venture, it's age-old advice, but I think it's something everybody needs to be reminded of all the time. It's so true. I mean, your perspective is everything. You know, there's always a silver lining if you choose to look for it. You know, one door closes, you got to look for that next door to open. I think it's some of the best advice. But listen, Anna, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on with me. It was a great conversation. It was very insightful. I wish you continued success in your business. From everything I heard today, I have no doubt you'll continue on the path to success. So I really appreciate you coming on, and I'll be in touch soon. Okay.
Thanks, Matt. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. You too.